Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Red Sox, it's a big series. We got two teams in different leagues, but both seemingly Padres in better position, but both headed for the playoffs, both relatively hot. Red Sox hotter than the Padres. We're going to miss Garrett Crochet, but we're going to see two good pitchers and a pitcher who has been good against the Padres and has been good before in Walker Buehler. We have lots to talk about. I always defer to you. You're the boss. Where do you want to start?
You know, I'd like to talk just very briefly about that Diamondbacks series. To me, Kevin, at first glance, it reminded me a little bit of the Cardinals series, which is maybe some uneven play at times, but heck, you still take two of three, something that you should be doing. The Padres can win two-thirds of their games the rest of the season. They'll win the National League West and get a first-round playoff bye. Continue to be very impressed with the Padres newcomers. Kevin, you've had a chance to watch these guys for a while. They're getting more of a sample size. What are your first impressions of? Let's just talk about the position players here for a minute.
Well, it couldn't have started better, really, in terms of, you know, it is a small sample size, but you were looking to fill needs in left field and at catcher. And those two guys, Ramon Laureano and Freddie Fermin, have been fantastic. I mean, they're contributing, especially Laureano, with big hits and just constantly getting on base. But Fermin, I don't know if it's 7 for 16 or something. The guy is, you know, he bunts, he runs, he blocks balls, you know. But look, that's all you can ask is at the start when you got him. We're not sitting here going, oh, there we go again, right? And we're not overreacting that way like we would be if none of them had done anything. And so we're not going to overreact the other way, but I just don't see how it for the six games could have gone any better. Now, Ryan O'Hearn, you look, that is, to me, you're not relying on Gavin Sheets. Like, Gavin Sheets has done a lot for you. You're not like saying, okay, we've got a good enough guy to fill in for us, to be our DH, to, you know, fill in at first base or whatever. You're saying, we think we can get a better, a Gavin Sheets 2.0. So I think Ryan O'Hearn, obviously, the big hit on Wednesday, the home run in the ninth inning. But I think that to me was like the signature pickup. I don't think he's going to have the biggest impact, but that was the signature pickup because you didn't have to get him.
Yeah, and for him, you know, it's his first home run of the year against a left-hander in a tough spot against a guy who made left-handed hitters look stupid over 2 days. Weird arm angle, weird stuff. I think he struck Jackson Merrill out twice on three pitches apiece. Ryan O'Hearn comes in, belts a ball. In his previous at-bat, he muscled a ball in the warning track despite hitting it off the handle. These are good signs for somebody who hadn't really been hitting a ton since the trade. And, you know, I think further proof that probably what they did is smart. You know, you've got him and Gavin Sheets. And between the two of them, they have to make up one pretty good player and one pretty good bench piece the rest of the way.
Yeah. And what they did, and it was the signature quote from AJ Preller was no weak links. Championship teams don't have weak links. Well, that's not necessarily true. There have been some bad championship teams or teams that got lucky or hot, but it is the philosophy you want to have and the philosophy that AJ Preller has. And so what he's trying to guard against, and there clearly is no way to guard against it since the Padres never did it in the regular season, but what he's trying to guard against is 24 scoreless innings.
Yep.
Which is what doomed them last year. A fantastic start. To me, really couldn't have been better. Okay, you were 4-2, not 6-0. Don't take me literally on everything, Ryan, but I don't think it really could have started better.
Yeah, it's funny too, and I don't necessarily think we need to go down this sort of back road yet, but how past seasons inform current decisions, right? I think that the thing that opened AJ Preller's eyes to the fact that they need to attract starting pitching and create starting pitchers was the year in which they were throwing out Jake Arrieta and Vince Velasquez at the end of a season in which they thought they were competitive, right? They ran out of arms. I wonder if last year's scoreless streak informed the decision this year to maybe get one more bat than you really needed, thinking, hey, you can never have too many impact bats, especially in the playoffs when things can go sideways.
I 100, I 98% agree with you. I'm only going to say that AJ would disagree with you and tell you, oh no, that's always how I've thought. Okay. But you went above and beyond after 21 to make sure your pitching was as good, you know, within the confines of reality and your spending limits or whatever, you know, what deals you could pull off. You went above and beyond after 21 to make sure. Okay. And then just like you said, went above and beyond this year to make or to do as best you can to make sure you don't have the 24 scoreless innings. Absolutely agree with you.
Right. Ramon Laureano, I mean, to me, that's vintage JJ Preller. He wants Ramon Laureano. He had a previous relationship with Ramon Laureano. He saw a guy who was having a good year, was controllable next year at a pretty good price. He went to Baltimore, engaged them on Laureano, and then said, by the way, I want Ryan O'Hearn too. And that's AJ Preller, isn't it? I mean, saying, and then by the way, getting them to pay for them, which to
Right,
me,
and that costs you more prospects. But okay, fine. My charge here is basically spend virtually no money. So the other type of capital I have here, I'm gonna throw in this guy, and we're gonna get $2 million back from you, or 3 million, whatever it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, let's touch on Nestor Cortes. Kevin, I was expecting to see some sort of Satchel Paige impression, hesitation. You know, I was showing my kids YouTube videos of him with the Yankees doing the thing with his leg.
I
And then
looked because I knew you were.
he goes out there and he's just a regular dude throwing left-handed. I came away impressed in terms of rocky first couple innings. He settles in. I thought just kind of a veteran outing. I hate phrases like workmanlike or, you know, yeoman's effort or whatever it is, but that's a veteran move. I mean, just a veteran outing, kept his team in the game.
That's about as good. I've seen a lot of guys coming back from 3 and 4 month absences. And if you get 5 innings, and he went 4 2/3, if you get 5 innings out of a guy and he keeps you in the game, that's a pretty good game for a guy who hasn't pitched. I don't care who it is. And he'd had 12 days off, I believe it was. So it was maybe it was more. It was a really good effort. Like, unfortunately, it was the fifth day in a row that they didn't get the, you know, more than 5 innings out of a guy. Fortunately, they had the next day off. And fortunately, their pitching has been so unbelievably, the bullpen, so unbelievably efficient most of the time that you can bring guys back. What Adrian Morahone did, you know, he leads the, Padres with 9 wins in relief, you know, leads Padres relievers. And usually it's like, oh, okay, well, that's the guy that just happened to be in there when the team took the lead.
It's
He
a
earned
long guy.
that win, man. He earned that win. Well, Ramon Laureano helped him earn it by the throw by throwing out the guy at third, Ramon Laureano and Jose Iglesias, to get through a 5-pitch seventh inning. So then they were going to send him out to face the two, well, it was a lefty and a switch hitter, but he got them in 5 pitches. So they let him go ahead and face Perdomo, another switch hitter, and he got him in 3 more. 13 pitches, 2 innings. That is typical of Adrian Morahone, and a little bit less so typical of the Padres bullpen.
Yeah, no, you're right. Speaking of the Padres bullpen, to me, one of the things, and I don't know that necessarily this says anything, but one of the reasons why baseball is great is, was it Tuesday night? I see one of the damnedest things I've ever seen in my life, which is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. turns around 103 mile an hour fastball and hits it, what, 104 mile an hour fastball and hits it 105 miles an hour in the left field seats and far. I mean, 100 and whatever it was, 110. Well, close to turn around.
110.
110. Lourdes Gurriel hits 104 mile an hour fastball, 110 miles an hour into left. They face each other again the next day. Mason Miller comes out and goes slider, slider, buckles him twice, then strikes him out. To me, that shows some maturity from a pretty young pitcher in Mason Miller. Kevin, if I could throw 85, much less 105, all I would do would be try to overpower guys with my fastball. And that slider might be just as important a weapon as his fastball. I haven't seen him miss a ton with it since he's gotten here. I don't know. Just really impressed with how he was able to adjust day to day.
Absolutely. Really, I'm glad we spent a little time on it. And what I loved about it is you could tell that he'd been talked to, and he knew after the game that he let up the home run that he should have done that. But then he was also like, well, but I'm not going to second guess myself because, you know, both pitches. So whichever one, he, yes, look, whether it was pitch selection or he blew it, because this happens a lot. This happens more than people realize. Mary, you should look when you see a guy hit a home run off a guy who doesn't give up home runs, or a rare home run like that one. Look at the pitch before it, or maybe two pitches before it. The pitch before it was 2/10 of a mile an hour faster, fastest pitch in Padres history, 104.1 miles an hour. And Lourdes Gurriel fouled it back. Okay. The next pitch is the same pitch, but a little bit inside, a little easier for Gurriel to get around on. It happens all the time. If you're gonna go back to the same pitch, you have to make it better, not worse. Now, like Gurriel could have missed that too, but it was in his wheelhouse. And so whether it was execution or pitch selection or both, right? Like you can make the wrong pitch, have the right thought about it, and it can work for you. But you're 100% right. Really good move by him.
Yep. And one of the things I think we've learned over the years, at least watching the Padres, I think of guys like Andrew Cashner. If you throw hard, it's good to throw hard. Don't get me wrong. Good big league hitters can hit fastballs at any speed if they're over the middle of the plate or middle in, right? It's having that secondary pitch and knowing how to use both of them. I mean, I just came away impressed with sort of the savvy from a young guy in Mason Miller, who I still think is a little bit of an unfinished product as a closer, to be able to come out the next day and make a good big league hitter look really stupid in about three pitches. I thought was impressive.
Yeah, think about it. The Padres got him under control 26, 27, 28. Think about that. Like, that's how young he is, right? Like, he's going into arbitration. They got him for $250,000 for the rest of the year. Like, he's making basically the minimum this year. I mean, that's how young he is,
That's
and
it.
how much there is to go.
Yep. Speaking of pitchers, speaking of guys who throw hard, speaking of guys who can be a little stubborn sometimes, Kevin, I loved your story in today's paper about Nick Pivetta and what he's been able to do for the Padres this year. You talk about his intensity and his attitude on game day, but the story is about so much more than that. It's about why he is having the year he's having now. Kevin, for those who have not read it, and I urge you to read it, give us sort of a CliffsNotes version. What has been working so well for Nick Pivetta this year?
You know, right from the start, Ruben Niebla moved him over to the first base side of the rubber, and it changed the angle of his pitches and kept him from arching his back to try to get the curveball where he needed it to go. If you look, his delivery's a little bit different. Not to get too technical, because I'm not qualified to do that, but it keeps him going more toward the plate and being behind the ball. That has kept consistency to his pitches. It's allowed him to the curveball, which isn't his best pitch. It's the pitch that Ruben Niebla doesn't even mess with. Doesn't need to get better. It doesn't. Whatever. That's Nick's pitch. It's allowed that to be more consistent. Ruben has, you know, instituted. Ruben's big on, and this is why the Padres pitchers have good splits, as in they face left and righty, generally speaking, pretty good. He's got him to institute a cutter, improved his sinker. Pivetta has admittedly gotten more into studying, right? Rather than relying on the catcher. Now, Nick Pivetta has good feel. Tries to have a good rapport with his catcher. So those are great. And to have those this year, right? He and Diaz work well together. But then to also get into the studying and be surrounded by Joe Musgrove and Yu Darvish. And Joe Musgrove in particular, and Michael King learned this from him, is, and there just wasn't room because you don't let me just write as much as I want, Ryan. But Nick Pivetta's undoing in the past was big innings, right? And if you don't have your best stuff or whatever, Joe Musgrove's specialty. Yes, Joe Musgrove has a no-hitter. Joe Musgrove has another complete game that I believe was a two-hitter. Joe Musgrove has pitched big in big games. Joe Musgrove's specialty, as many really good pitchers also is when they walk away from a game feeling like, man, they barely had anything, and they gave you 5 or 6 innings and kept their team in the game. And Nick Pivetta wasn't that guy until this year. And so he's taken the counsel of the veterans around him. Like, I think he's just been fantastic about that. But the number one thing that anybody will talk about is his intensity, because of what that gives you, the conviction behind your pitches, and then the edge that he has, man. And it's intense. heads, and I love it. He's not a great guy to deal with, and that just doesn't matter. He's the personification of that. Who cares? He treats his teammates well, better than you would think, and certainly came into this place wanting to be that good guy, that teammate. He's aware of what people think of him in terms of, and that's okay. And I love at times when he wants to, and he was this time, his candor. He generally has zero use for the media. He was very, very kind and candid. We talked in Arizona, and I just loved the insight into him. And this is what I told him, and he said that he liked it. He just wants to. It's important to him to be a good teammate. Because he was talking about how he understood that people think he's too intense and he wants to be respectful to opponents and everybody. But I said, you are the kid. When I was young, we played on the street or in the park and we chose sides. And there was always that kid who was the best, right? But he was also kind of an a-hole, right? Yeah. And like when he was on your team, you loved that guy. And when he was on the other team, you hated that guy. Yeah. And that's Nick Pivetta.
I think that there's probably somebody like Nick Pivetta in all of our lives, right? I think there's probably somebody in everybody's office, right? That there's a guy who can be difficult, who can be intense, but when he's excellent at his job, or if he's difficult and intense because he wants to do a good job, right? We can forgive a lot and understand a lot if we're all pulling toward the same goal, right?
And that's absolutely.
Yeah. Can I share this quote from Michael? Go ahead. Michael King.
No, go ahead.
Great quote from Michael King. Here we go. About Nick Pivetta. When he's in competition, he's making it like his World Series, King told you. We played chess on the way to the hotel last night, and he was pissed I beat him. That kind of guy is who you want to take the ball every fifth. Yeah. Right.
Yep. And another thing from Michael King, because that the other thing is, because it's flat out, you're right. I love that we all could kind of relate to having that person, maybe being that person, whatever. And it's fine. Now, take it another level, and it was important for guys to say that, and I think some of these guys see how he treats the media and how intense he is, and that maybe the media doesn't understand. I try to and never take it personally. But I think some guys sometimes are like, hey, but I want you to understand this about Nick. Michael King said during his process of coming back from this nerve issue, which he'll be back tomorrow, that Nick Pivetta has asked him every step of the way, has wanted to know everything about it. Very concerned, very in tune with Michael King. There was the other night when J.P. Sears, Nick Pivetta spent 5 minutes with, Nick Pivetta was so locked into his start and so like had suggestions and just so analyzing it, a teammate that he had just met. And that, you know, I see it all the time. He's always engaging with teammates. Now, Nick Pivetta is also the guy that wants everything the same, wants people out of his way. And he is there to work too. That is clear, man. Look, I'm not, like he can grade on people and he knows it, but like there is one purpose they have to be there, and that is to win. And then the other purpose is to lift each other up. And he checks both those boxes.
Yep. He's a guy, and Kevin, I would not have thought this in April or May. If the Padres season comes down to one game, maybe he's the guy you want in this group right now. Maybe he's the guy you want.
Yep. And he's that guy you could see going 3 innings in game 7, right? Like because
out of the pen,
that's all he had, right? That's all he had. And somehow he's getting it done. Yes. Yep. That's legend stuff. And obviously now we're projecting and getting way ahead, but yes, that's that guy. Now, Michael King could be that guy too. Absolutely. But like, you know, we don't know, right? We're going to see tomorrow what Michael King looks like. Let's remember, just like I said about Nestor Cortez, we're talking about 2.5 months now. And, you know, but this wasn't an injury. This was like a nuisance for Michael King, but still has not pitched, had the one rehab start. So it'll, you know, let's not judge too much on tomorrow.
Yeah, let's get down to that, though. Nick Pivetta pitches tonight, first of a 3-game series against the Boston Red Sox at Petco Park. He's going up against Walker Buehler. Remember him, Kevin?
Oh, I do.
Yes, Walker Buehler, 1.8 ERA against the Padres in 12 career starts. When the Dodgers were just eating the Padres' lunch for years, a lot of it was on the back of Walker Buehler. Walker Buehler's had some injury issues. The Dodgers let him walk during the offseason. He has signed with Boston, not for nothing, but Dustin Mays in that rotation now too. Sort of Los Angeles East, going up against Nick Pivetta, a former Red Sox himself. This is his first time facing his former team.
This will really be something if Walker Buehler shuts them down tonight, because he's been, I don't want to say horrible, but he's been horrible.
He has an ERA of 5.7, which is crazy. His fielding independent pitching number is 5.89. According to our Jeff Sanders, if that were to hold, it would be the highest of his, or sorry, the second highest of his career after his rookie year. He's also allowed 19 home runs. That's already one shy of his career high. Some of that, I'm sure, is playing at Fenway Park. But man, this is a guy who we thought was a star, a Cy Young Award winner, et cetera, et cetera. And just injuries have really taken their toll on him.
Yeah, the comeback hasn't, you know, he's still a guy. I think he's on the mound and you go, okay, he could do this. He's had some good starts this year, but it's remarkable. You know, I'm about context. I'm about recency with pitchers. When you face them, like, you could face Walker Buehler at any time this year and be like, this guy's not pitching very well. So yeah. The Rays, he's handled them twice. But he handled the White Sox. It's not been good. His last two starts haven't been good, and plenty of others. I mean, it's remarkable that he's been this poor.
Right. Speaking of guys who we used to hear a lot about, Lucas Giolito.
Yeah.
Lucas Giolito, let's talk about him real quick. He's pitching Saturday against Michael King. He's the number one overall pick 13 years ago. Is having a great year since returning from having the brace procedure. He's 8-2, ERA of 3.5. Missed all of last year with the brace procedure. He's only walking 2.5 per nine innings. Seems like somebody who is, I mean, if we're looking for reasons why the Red Sox are having some success, we could probably start there. Pretty good starting pitcher.
Yeah, out of Harvard Westlake, I believe.
Interesting.
Harvard Westlake, if you don't know, yes, well, it's a factory. If you don't know and you've never been to either of their campuses, it's a little like going to Pepperdine mixed with Harvard, mixed with Kauai. It is a private school in Los Angeles that makes the tuition at Cathedral look like a bargain. So, and I believe it was like middle of the first round, but he, nonetheless, this was a star. This was a guy who could shut you down. And you know what? Having a pretty decent year. Yeah. As you said, and coming off, I believe, 8 innings, it was a good game. It was he shut the Astros down.
Quick list of famous Harvard Westlake guys in Major League Baseball: just Christian Yelich, Jack Flaherty, Max Fried, Brandon Bosch, a guy named Pete Crow Armstrong, who may be a little famous now. All sorts of really good ones. Although I'm not sure it can top Jamie Lee Curtis, Shirley Temple, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jason Segel, and Candace Bergen. Thank you.
In my opinion, and now this was over 20 years ago when I was covering high schools for the Los Angeles Daily News, mm-hmm. I went to their junior high campus, which is, I believe, Brentwood. It might be. No, it's not Brentwood. I believe it's Bel Air. It might be actually Beverly Hills. You know, you get the borders of the two places mixed up. Mm-hmm. I thought it was nicer than the high school campus. You know, but it was the waterfalls and those sorts of things between classes. But yes, it's quite the place. I'm sure all those players, I don't know. I don't know anybody's socioeconomic situation. I'm sure all those players paid full tuition.
Yeah, my guess is they probably played a little club baseball too growing up. Just guessing. Kevin, no waterfalls at Fallbrook High?
No, not that I remember. No. Maybe a leak from the roof a couple times. I'm not sure.
Sunday, we got Brian Bello, 8-5, 3.03 ERA. Having a great season, 26 years old. He's allowed just one run over his last 13 innings. He's won two starts in a row. He's facing Dylan Cease, who I think, and I don't want to jinx anything, seems to be trending in the right direction based on what we saw the last time out. But
I love your optimism, Mike Schilt.
But we've had this conversation six or eight times this year already. I think we need a larger sample size before we can declare that he's improving, correct?
I will say this, right? Mm-hmm. He has, with much conviction, talked about, to some extent, detailed, as much as Dylan will. He's a deep dude, but he's not all that insightful. That that he feels good, and no one could watch him. You can look at the final line and go, oh, this guy sucks, except then you'd see the strikeouts and you go, how did he strike out 10 people in four innings while giving up four runs? Well, because he's really good. And so I will say, I don't know how to put it, that I don't know that I'd be surprised if he doesn't do well this start, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does well.
That makes sense. That makes total
sense. Think about that. Okay.
Padres Red Sox 3-game series starting tonight at Petco Park. Kevin, at the end of every episode, I put you on the spot. Today is no different. We were talking earlier about intense guys. You've covered a lot of different sports in San Diego. Most intense guy you've ever been around.
It's different, right? It's all different, right? How it comes out, because you really couldn't come up with two more polar opposites in terms of how it comes out. Though I spent a lot of my career defending this guy on like national TV and national radio, because it was always what people thought. Philip Rivers, they thought he was a jerk. And he never cursed, and he had only respect for people, ever of anybody. But the intensity was just every bit as Nick Pivetta. Now, the old days in baseball, it'd probably be more rare to not run into a Nick Pivetta or three or four or five on every team I covered. And that's what got some guys through. And I've covered some darn intense coaches, Rod Carew, Larry Boa. The Padres haven't had that guy. Right? Like Joe Musgrove, intense, but not in that way of where it's just all encompassing. Like Joe Musgrove could come off the field in the fourth inning and you could go up, hey, Joe, what's up? Hey, is there anything you'd like to talk about? Like, it's just remarkable, right? And then he's out there looking to kill somebody when he's on the field. So that all encompassing guy is a little different, right? Like Mike King is super intense. But Nick Pivetta might take the cake for just at all times. And there's, I mean, I'm not going to, like, I've had some things with Nick Pivetta where like, whoa, dude, that's crazy. But not going to talk about him here, and not like in a bad way. He's a good person, I think, but he's just single minded and, super polite Canadian. But basically, Nick Pivetta could tell you to go jump in a lake and you'd be like, all right, cool. Yeah. Thank you for being so polite about it. But Philip Rivers, and ask anybody who played with him, there was not much more that he wanted to do than to win. And he hated to lose. And I will tell you this, if I look back, I'm bummed that guy didn't get a Super Bowl. I hope it doesn't keep him out of the Hall of Fame.
Yep. Had Philip Rivers gotten a Super Bowl, I think they'd probably still be here too. And that stings a little bit too.
It's Philip's fault.
It is. Kevin, if I can share something real quick. I had an internship in Phoenix, Arizona at the Arizona Republic, heading into my senior year of college. Okay. It was 2002, the year after the World Series. I walked into that clubhouse and looked around, and you saw Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. You want to talk about guys who probably shouldn't make eye contact any day of the week, much less on the days they're pitching. Intimidating. Yeah. And when we talk about intense, when you talk about Pivetta, it reminds me a little bit of Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson was never a fun guy to be around in the clubhouse, right? But I'm not sure for a decade in baseball, there's anybody you'd rather have pitching a big game for you, getting a big strikeout for you, et cetera. It just goes to show. It's why baseball's the best, Kevin. It takes all kinds and all sizes. You know, look at the Padres catcher. Look at, you can be good at baseball by coming at it from a million different ways. And what works for Nick Pivetta is being locked in, dialed in all the time.
Absolutely. Those are two great examples because of how good they were and just how dominant they were, and they were intense. But that you could walk in and other guy, some of the people I didn't mention just because they weren't like real household names unless you were like a real baseball person, but it was just more of what they did. It might also have been, that there was probably more amphetamine use in the majors back in the 80s and 90s. But anyway, more of like you could go up to a Tony Phillips and one day he'd bite your head off because you caught him at that time, right? And the other day give you all the time in the world. It wasn't that they're bad people. It's that they were there to make a living and help their team win.
Right. Was this late career Anaheim Angel, Tony Phillips?
Yes.
Awesome. I love this, Kevin. I could do another half hour about this, but you have a busy day ahead of you. Padres, Red Sox, 6:40 p.m. tonight, Petco Park. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.